Good morning. It's great to be back with you in spite of the weather. Before I left, I talked with many of you and I said, please have all the snow before while I'm away. And you were most accommodating, I have to say. I guess I forgot to tell you to get rid of it before I got back, though. In this morning's worship service, and the forum that will follow, which I do hope you'll join us for in the community room, you'll learn much more about our urban ministry. And to help make that possible, I'm thrilled to welcome to our pulpit the new senior minister and executive director of the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, the Reverend Mary Margaret Earle. Mary Margaret comes to the urban ministry from a 10-year community ministry in Rhode Island, where she worked with the homeless and at-risk communities. And Mary Margaret, we're honored to have you here with us today. We enter this time of worship with open minds and loving hearts.
We come together to be challenged, uplifted, inspired, to find the best in ourselves and share it with others, to work together for justice, peace, and real equality.
We also come to this gathered community seeking comfort, encouragement, and support, especially in difficult times, and to feel the presence of the Spirit that dwells in us and among us.
We know that within each of us there is a spark of the divine. The light of truth, love, and justice shines in each of us, sometimes brightly, other times it barely flickers. Yet again this morning we bring together a spark from the flames that burn within each one of us to kindle our common flame.
Our flame now burns, and it must shine as a light to the world, with a message of welcome and acceptance, of love and peace and justice, of compassion and understanding. So this morning, again in song, we pledge to let our light shine, here and everywhere we go, and not to cover it, the scripture says, under a bushel basket, but to put it on a lampstand, so it may give light for all to see. Hymn 118. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth and love, and to help one another. Almost forgot you this morning, Sanghi, but you made it in the mad dash to the organ. Today we're going to talk about the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, but it's our urban ministry. So I want to focus on those three words, particularly for our youth and our children here, but for all of us, so that we can explore a little bit more about that. And Mary Margaret, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Okay.
So let's start at the end, the last word. Ministry. Why is what you guys do in Boston ministry?
Well, when I first thought of becoming a minister, I thought a lot about what did that word mean, minister or ministry. And what I think it means is to help build up or to heal. And so the ministry work that we all do together in Boston is really about building up, healing what's broken, bringing things that are apart together. And it's a ministry that is based on our faith, our Unitarian Universalist faith. So it's not just doing good work. It's doing this work from a faith-based place.
Okay, well, the second to last word is urban. And I wonder if any of our kids or youth could tell us what that word urban means in the title. Can anyone tell us what urban means? Anybody know?
I see a hand down here.
You see a hand down here? What?
Like a city or like...
Yes.
Like a city.
That's the place where we do this ministry. And notice I already said we, so I'm giving the next part away. But the place where the ministry takes place, right?
And in cities, there are lots of different things that happen in cities. There are big buildings. There are a lot of people who work there. There are plays and theaters, and it's a very exciting place. But sometimes in cities, there are also difficult things. And sometimes in cities, there is some poverty. There's some violence and some hard things in cities, too. And so that's all part of what we call our urban landscape.
Okay, and now comes that third word, our. How this is what you guys do in Boston. Why is it our, like our as in the people of First Parish of Stowe and Acton? Why is it our urban ministry?
Well, we have a very special relationship with our congregation. So the urban ministry is very lucky that it has 50 congregations that are part of its structure. And I think about it like when I was thinking about some of the questions that Reverend May asked me today, I was thinking about when we draw a sun and there's a center of the sun and then there are rays emanating from the center. But for us, not only does the center send forth rays, the rays also send back energy and volunteerism and financial support and ideas and suggestions. And so I think of our is that we together make up the sun that is the urban ministry with a center in Roxbury and the rays being the churches like Stowe and Acton.
Before our children and youth leave, can you just tell us a few of the ways the things we do at our urban ministry that helps people?
One of the things that we do is we have a shelter where people who are having lots of fights and hard times in their families, they can come and they can be safe with us. So it might be moms, might be dads, might be single people, it might be children with their moms or their dads who are at our shelter. So one of the things that we do is keep people safe. We have another program where we welcome in young women from all kinds of backgrounds, and some of them are coming out of those shelters. Some of them have experienced homelessness or may become homeless, and so we provide a community setting where they can be safe and have warmth and heat and food. And we also have a program where we provide tutoring for high school students. So I know there are a few children here. Does anybody ever need help with their homework? Anybody who ever needs help with their homework? I see one little hand here. Yes, sometimes we need help with our homework.
And the youth are in the gallery.
And some of the students in Roxbury, they need help with their homework and help doing the paperwork to get into college, and we help with those kinds of things too. So those are the sorts of things that our urban ministry works on together.
Well, thank you. And we want you to know that we at First Parish want to continue to help you with that urban ministry in every way that we can, both our children and our youth and our adults. So we know we'll learn more today from you, and we'll provide people with more opportunities to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
We try to breathe in peace, but it is difficult to find that peace when life is in turmoil, when there is war and terrorism in our world, when things are a struggle, when we are anxious or ill, physically or mentally. When friends or family are having a difficult time. When hate and prejudice still rear their ugly faces. When so much is left undone. Sometimes it feels like there is no oxygen of peace to fill our lungs. But then we must breathe more deeply and find the peace, breathing in beyond all the struggle, drawing in air to fill our lungs from the place of peace that our heart knows, but our mind sometimes conceals. And then we must exhale love. Love to meet the challenges, the pain, the hate, the lack of tolerance and acceptance. The love that cures. The love that conquers fear. The love that endures all things. The love that never dies. Breathe in peace now. To calm your soul, and to prepare you to do the most important thing you can ever do. And you can do it with every breath. Breathe out love. Breathe in peace. And especially, breathe out love. So many wonderful people here, and so many reasons why it's important for each of us to support our church. This community would not be the same without this institution, and neither would our personal lives. It's indeed critical that each of us pledge and contribute. But the offerings that we give here are not limited to the programs and services that take place here within our walls at First Parish. Each Sunday, one half of the non-pledge offering goes beyond these walls. And each month, the local, national, international, or local organization is selected to receive these funds. And when possible, we also invite people not only to contribute of their treasure or their money, but also of their time and talent. Now, this month's recipient is, as you heard, our own Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry. It truly is part of our social justice program at our church. And I just want to kind of demonstrate how important that is and how connected we are to that. So I just want you to raise your hands, if you will. If you bought a holiday gift for a child at Renewal House or a domestic violence shelter, raise your hand. If you'd helped with prepare food and serve food or send food for a meal at the Roxbury Youth Program that we usually do each year, raise your hand. If you've helped with a program at the Urban Ministry like the Explorers Club, gone in on a Saturday and helped with the younger kids in some way, raise your hand. If you volunteered there to tutor or to mentor, either there in one of the programs, or you've participated in the men's group that was there, or any other program that was there going into Roxbury to participate, raise your hand. And if you've made a financial contribution, either as part of this church's offering or on your own directly to the Urban Ministry, raise your hand. Yeah. That's wonderful. And we need to keep it up. And we need to increase our support where we can because it is our Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry. And there we reach across race and class and transform lives. Not just the lives of the urban, but also the lives of the suburban who do the reaching too. There's many opportunities to help there, and please come to the forum after, find out more. There is a way that anyone in this church can be of help, whether it's doing it here or doing it there. One opportunity coming up is on March 15th. I still need a few more volunteers to go with me to do the Explorers Club. We're doing a spring program where kids are going to plant seeds in pots and make paper flowers and sing some spring songs, we hope. We need help with some of those activities. So if you can do that and want to do that, please let me know. This morning, we also ask that you help financially. The offering we'll now take up is for not only the work of the church, but for the urban ministry. Please note that it'll be split 50-50 unless you indicate otherwise on your check. And we thank you immensely for your continued generosity. Did some worship in Mexico, but there was no choir like that. If we missed you, missed you. I'd like to share a reading with you this morning, words from Wendell Berry. If the white man has inflicted the wound of racism upon black men, the cost has been that we would receive the mirror image of that wound into himself. As a member of the dominant race, he's felt little compulsion to acknowledge it or speak of it. The more painful it has grown, the more deeply he has hidden it within himself. But the wound is there, and it is a profound disorder, as great a damage in his mind as in his society. The wound is in me, as complex and deep in my flesh as blood and nerves. I have borne it all my life with varying degrees of consciousness, but always carefully, always with the most delicate consideration for the pain I would feel if I were somehow forced to acknowledge it. But now I am increasingly aware of the opposite compulsion. I want to know as fully and exactly as I can what the wound is and how much I'm suffering from it. And I want to be cured. I want to be free of the wound myself, and I don't want to pass it on to my children. Perhaps this is only wishful thinking. Perhaps such a thing is not to be done by one man or in one generation. Surely a man would have to be almost dangerously proud to think himself capable of it. And so maybe I'm really saying only that I feel an obligation to make the attempt, and that I know if I fail to make at least the attempt, I forfeit any right to hope that the world will become better than it is now.
On the 24th of November, I was beginning my orientation at the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry in Roxbury. I still was finishing up my ministry in Rhode Island at a nonprofit that provides basic human needs to those who are homeless, hungry, and poor. But I had taken a few days to begin wading into the work of our urban ministry. This was what I wanted to do: meet the board, meet the staff, figure out the copy machine, learn where to park, the basic things. But that day, Ferguson arrived. That day, a grand jury decided not to indict a Ferguson, Missouri police officer, an officer who had shot and killed Michael Brown, an unarmed African-American teenager. It became the shot heard round the world. And that day, my third day of orientation, before I had learned the copy machine, before I had learned where to park, the urban ministry staff came to me. They wanted to say something to our congregations about race and racial injustice. They felt called to make a statement on Ferguson. They felt called to wade into the national conversation on race. And I didn't want to. They wanted to talk about race, and I didn't want to. For the past 10 years, I worked at Macaulay Ministries, a faith-based nonprofit on the south side of Providence. At Macaulay, we served those who were mentally ill, addicted, uneducated. They were white, black, Hispanic. All of them were poor. The work was hands-on and immediate. We worked downstream, where people washed up on the shore after their lives had been chewed up by classism and racism and poverty, after their lives had been chewed up by family violence, by the untreated voices in their heads, by the crashing economy. This was where people came when they had no resources left, no good support systems, not enough tools to thrive in this world as it is, where they came in need of the most basic of things, socks, a toothbrush, a hot meal. Over the years there, over time, one brick at a time, I learned to talk some about poverty. I learned to talk about homelessness. I learned that homelessness was a failure of the private sector's interest in meeting the housing needs of the poor or even the middle class. It was not a failure of character. But I didn't talk about race, not square on, anyway. I loved the work at Macaulay, loved deeply the people that we served, maybe because they needed love so much. I left that ministry for the urban ministry. Much as I loved my work, I dreamt of doing social justice in a Unitarian Universalist context. I wanted to swim upstream. I wanted to stop lives from getting chewed up. And I knew what we Unitarian Universalists are capable of. Our roots in history are deep. Our theological roots in early liberal Protestantism, our old meeting houses. And we are also often at the vanguard of change. UUs were among the first faiths to ordain women and stand against sexism. UUs are among the strongest religious traditions on issues of the earth and other species. UUs were pivotal on gay marriage, confronting faith traditions that tried to silence the movement, and we pushed the issue to the finish line in states like Rhode Island. Our roots are deep, and our branches reach even higher. That extended reach from the past into the future created the urban ministry is mirrored at the urban ministry. We are one of the oldest social services agencies in the United States. Read our history, and you will see luminaries in the Unitarian story sparkling in the historical sky of the urban ministry, too. The urban ministry, like our UU movement, also leans into the future. We created one of the state's first domestic violence shelters, one of the early after-school programs in Roxbury, have been an early ally in the prison justice movement. Our history lends us gravitas, and our spirit presses us to lean into the future. I wanted to be part of that. I knew I would be stepping into programs aimed at transforming UUs and those we connect with. Among our programs are these. Renewal House, which since 1980 has provided temporary emergency shelter to more than 1,000 individuals and families escaping domestic violence. It was one of the first to shelter male survivors, too. The Roxbury Youth Program, which tutors, nurtures, and feeds young people after school. It promotes academic success and welcomes more than 50 dedicated volunteers. Bethany House, a transitional housing program for young women from many backgrounds, including those who've been homeless and have experienced violence or abuse. Jericho Road, a program matching high-level UU talent with small nonprofits seeking to do good work in the Roxbury community. And there are ESL classes for Spanish-speaking neighbors, our Explorers Club for young people, a Hope Out Loud concert to bring together urban and suburban choirs, the Jack Mendelsohn Lecture, all of that. And more than that. The urban ministry is more than that, poised to be more than that. The urban ministry stands in Roxbury, which in the 1940s became the center of the African American community in Boston, where nearly 50% of the population is African American and just 20% white. Where 12th Baptist Church stands, the church Martin Luther King Jr. considered his home church when he was at the Boston University School of Theology. Where this fall, more than 200 people, including those from the ACLU and the NAACP, gathered outside police headquarters to protest racial profiling. And the urban ministry, too, stands in the midst of 50 Unitarian Universalist congregations that are its reason for being. Congregations that have been reading the book, The New Jim Crow, about the impact of mass incarceration on communities of color. Congregations that have, long before many other faiths, been thinking about white privilege. Congregations that have been asking how to address racism, how to move into justice. The urban ministry stands in the midst of these two communities, a community of color and a community of change in 2015, when racial unrest bubbles to the surface, when racial questions rise to the surface, when hurt rises to the surface, and when things are going to change somehow and we have to pray for the better. But I didn't want to talk about race. Now, my hesitation was in part the good sense of a new leader reluctant to speak before listening. No one should come into an organization and suppose she's the authority. I had a lot of listening to do before I started talking. But on the ride home that night, the night of November 24th, I sat in my car and I realized that beyond the wisdom of listening, I was hesitant to talk about race, to deal with race, and it was something deeper than being new. I wanted to fix problems. I wanted to address injustice through education, training, shelter, but I feared talking head-on about race. I've learned that talking about race is thorny and emotional. I have had conversations on race that were real, and those were contained in relationships built on trust. Oppositional conversations with my beloved father, a conservative Republican born poor, whose father worked in a lumber mill, who is the first generation to go to college, who doesn't see race issues as I do, but whom I love completely, who loves me, and so we can talk about race. Conversations of understanding with African-American women journalists with whom I worked closely when I was a newspaper reporter, who became my friends over time and through shared experiences of work and respect. We could talk about race. I also witnessed other conversations on race, conversations that harmed more than helped, manufactured conversations called workshops that were built on good intentions, maybe, or maybe were just a way for management to prove it cared about diversity. I saw conversations that were grounded in possibly looking good but not really doing good. I saw conversations in which people stumbled into stupid comments on race and faced hard consequences. I saw people hurt because of those comments. I didn't want to make those mistakes or cause that hurt. I didn't want to talk about race. And yet, at the Urban Ministry, I saw that I need to be able to talk about race. And so, on November 24th, we put out a statement on Ferguson. Frankly, my new colleagues did most of it, took me by the hand, and led me there. But I began my journey of finding a way to talk about race. It's not so much a journey of understanding that racism exists. Read the numbers in the prison system, in the court system, the educational system, the unemployment system, and it's hard to ignore. According to The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, the U.S. has imprisoned a larger percentage of its black population than did South Africa during the height of apartheid. While studies suggest white youth engage in drug crime more than people of color, in some states African-American men have been sent to prison at rates of up to 50% more than their white counterparts, mostly for drug crimes. According to the Economic Policy Institute, 45% of young black children live in poverty compared to just 14% of white children. I know racism exists. My journey is to push past my apprehension in talking about race. And so on November 24th, I began a new leg on that journey. And my journey does begin again with listening deeply, in the hopes that eventually I will have something to say that can help. In the 13 weeks and 2 days since I arrived at the Urban Ministry in Roxbury, I have been listening to longtime activists talk about the 1960s when suburban contractors dumped their trash in vacant Roxbury lots to avoid tipping fees. Listening at a police forum at 12th Baptist Church where African American parents, sisters, teens shared their grief and their anger. Listening to a local black pastor in Roxbury wonder, how can you use Connect with the Christian faith community in Roxbury when our theologies differ? Listening to young activists gather at their Urban Ministry to talk about their hopes for making change and why they should lead the way. And listening to UUs who long to connect with a community in Roxbury and urban Boston, listening to UUs who have read The New Jim Crow and feel called to act now, listening to our members who want to invite African Americans to their churches or visit black churches, who want to have real conversations, real relationships, somehow, listening. I'm trying to listen my way into understanding how white suburban congregations can engage with a black community in a mutually uplifting way, understanding how to create space to talk about race in a way that allows us to share our questions and risk making mistakes so that we can be authentic, understanding how and when talk should lead into action, understanding whether the answers to racism lie in combating the criminal justice system or looking deeply within to acknowledge our own racism, not because we have ill intent, but because we are raised on a daily diet of signals that African Americans are less than or dangerous. understanding whether we first forge friendships across difference using dialogue as the tool, or build friendships that are built on actions to make change. Whether we march or pray or sign petitions or all of it, and more than that, I'm listening. I believe that Martin Luther King Jr. was right 51 years ago when he wrote that we must all learn to live together as brothers or we will all perish together as fools. We are tied together in a single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. In the same way that I, as a straight woman, felt stifled by the big secret that kept gaze in the closet, in the same way I feel my being relax as that secret is banished and my gay sisters and brothers are freer to be who they are, in that same way I believe we are all imprisoned when our sisters and brothers are imprisoned by racism. We are imprisoned by our fear. I believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every human being and that racism is an affront to that. I believe that Ferguson and Staten Island have made it harder for white people to ignore conversations on race, and that change is in the air, and I believe that we can be a part of it. I believe that Unitarian Universalists have an incredible capacity to make change and have incredible resources to help make it. 13 weeks and 2 days ago, I arrived at the Urban Ministry and began to see that the journey before me was harder and more complicated than I'd known. I don't have the answers yet, but I am ready to begin. I hope that you will join me, continue to join us, join your Urban Ministry in the weeks and the months ahead that Stowe and Acton will keep walking with us on that long road to healing, to justice, to true sisterhood and brotherhood, that you will be part of our common work at the UU Urban Ministry to build up beloved community. Amen. Blessed be. May it be so.
May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Amen.